It will probably take at least 10 years for the full impact of AI to be felt. I would have 85%.
85% at all-time highs.
I think it's red.
It also gives you a little bit of protection against the weakening economy environment.
Your capital is at risk. The value of your shares, ETFs and ETCs can fall as well as rise, which could mean getting back less than you originally put in. This content is for information purposes only and is not investment advice. Past performance is not an indication of future results. Welcome to episode 5 of The Art of Investing, brought to you by IG, the FTSE listed global investing platform. Yes, it's here. It's time for the live portfolio launch, the time when real life decisions come to real life consequences. Now, as usual, we are going to go straight to Spice for a short market update.
It's been another week of wows and goshes. We've basically seen at the beginning of the week a 4% fall in equity markets, led by the US, because they were off at new all-time highs. By the way, that's not unusual. You typically get 4 to 6 of these sort of small 4 to 5% drawdowns each year. That's the average that's been going on for 100 years. So that's nothing unusual. But I think what's interesting is it bounced back very quickly. So we are already back within 1% of the all-time highs. So we've bounced back 3%, having fallen 4%. So that's great. So it shows the underlying health of the markets is still there.
The sell-offs are getting shorter and shorter.
Absolutely. Part of the reason for that sell-off, we had, having had some very good results of the Magnificent Seven, we had then had a mixed bag because Amazon reported on the Friday. They were disappointing. Their shares fell 8%. Apple reported good results. They were only down about 2%. Trump also put in some new extra tariffs on places like India, another 25%, basically punishing countries that are importing oil from Russia. Remember, he's trying to bring that war to an end in Ukraine, and that's the way he thinks he can do it, by sort of cutting off some of the money that's going back into Russia. So Switzerland have been given a 39% tariff from Trump. The Swiss Prime Minister went over to America this week and was batted away by Trump. So those still stand. The other big stuff that's happened this week, OPEC Plus, which is, remember, OPEC and Russia together have increased their oil production. So we talked last week about the fact that oil price had been going up quite strongly, about 8 or 9% over the last month. Well, it's given it all back this week. It's given back about 8%. That's good for inflation outlook, which is positive for equity markets underlying and the prospect for interest rate cuts. The Magnificent Seven, together, the interesting thing is now that Apple yesterday went up 8% on its own. And that was because they stood there and said, we are going to put an extra $100 billion into US manufacturing. This is, of course, the thing Trump wants to happen most. Now, if you add up what Apple are putting in, what Nvidia are putting in, and Taiwan Semiconductor, they're spending over $1 trillion in new manufacturing in the US. And Trump has said that anyone who is manufacturing the US will not be hit by things like a new 100% tariff on semiconductors, which he also introduced this week.
It did blow my mind because we found out in the Apple results that the cost of tariffs is $1 billion per quarter. So Apple are spending $100 billion to save themselves $1 billion a quarter. And the stock goes up 8% on the back of that. This is the kind of market we're in.
It wasn't all good news. There was lots of other results this week. As you've remembered, last week was the height of the reporting season with 25% of the S&P 500 reporting. This week, we've had another big chunk. We're sort of coming to the end of that now. We're about 80% of the way through. A couple of things I'll point out. The companies that are exposed to the consumer on balance have been worse. So in the UK, Domino's Pizza had a terrible set of results. Shares fell 17% when I last looked. Disney were down 2%. Uber were down sort of 2%. And Snap, for those of you who use Snapchat still, and that won't be you, CJ.
Certainly won't.
It won't even be my kids anymore. They've moved on from that.
But Snapchat, setting a trend, you see. People following me now.
Well, they had a profit warning last night, down 19% the shares. So there are pockets of weakness everywhere. But one of the favourite things of my favourites is Yum Brands. They own KFC, Pizza Hut, and Trump's favorite, Taco Bell. So they had a pretty tough time. Their shares were down 6%. So it's not all good news, but the biggest companies are delivering. The earnings are coming through. And so if you look at the overall reporting season so far, about 80% of all the companies reporting have beaten expectations. But the main event this week really is after we recorded last week's episode, we had the US, what's called the non-farm payroll. So that shows the strength of the US employment market. And it was expected to be weakening because, you know, the impact of tariffs, etc., and the uncertainty that brought. And there was actually a rise in the payrolls of 73,000. That was sort of broadly in line with expected, but there was backward revisions which wiped out what everyone thought was actually a good couple of months beforehand.
So there's just for people generally, the higher the number, the stronger the economy, the lower the number, the weaker the economy.
There were 250,000 payrolls for each of the 2 months before. That was brought down by hundreds of thousands. So now the average over the last 3 months is just 35,000. That shocked the markets. That's why equities then fell, led by the US, about 4%. But the bounce back has come very quickly. And that's because almost immediately, the markets began adjusting their interest rate outlook and expecting now another interest rate cut in the next 12 months. But the next Federal Markets meeting is on the 17th of September, where now there is a 93% probability of a 0.25% cut. And that was right down at about 50-50 a couple of weeks ago. Not only has it affected the next meeting, which is the 17th of September, say, but if you look out to this time next year, the market is now thinking that there's going to be 4, 5, or 6 rate cuts. And the highest probability is around that 5 rate cuts. So hot off the press, while we're recording this, the Bank of England have cut interest rates by 0.25%.
They did.
Woohoo! So hopefully the mortgage lenders and the banks will start cutting mortgage rates, albeit very marginally. Fortunately, they're going to cut your savings rates too, no doubt. But nevertheless, that is a positive for the UK. And undoubtedly, Rachel Reeves will be very relieved because when she has to go and borrow another 51 billion or whatever she has to, the cost of that will be slightly cheaper than it was yesterday.
Now, it's time for your chance to see a fly on the wall look at what happens in the big institutions when they have their asset allocation meetings. An important part of that is to nominate a chairman of the investment committee. So the three of us sat round earlier today and we voted for who we think should be chairman. Spice voted for me. I voted for Spice, and then CJ voted for himself. And unfortunately, the most senior of us all gets the casting vote, and therefore, Chairman, sir, it's over to you.
Well, thank you very much. I hope to remain in this position for some time, but clearly results will show whether that's the case. I would like, if possible, to take over the yellow and the red cards so I can shut you all up.
That will not be happening.
Okay, so that plays to one point here. We've got a lot of things to talk about today. Richie's got a very important job as contributing to the debate, but he's also still going to be brandishing the yellow and the red cards to make sure that we keep things moving.
Secretary and timekeeper.
Correct. Someone's got to write the minutes. So a few ground rules to start with. We're going to assume that our target audience is someone aged between 30 and 40 who's investing for the long term in an ISA or SIP. In our first episodes, we talked about the power of compounding, which basically means start early in your investing life and invest for the long term. And those returns will then build up over many, many years. We also said in those first few episodes that cash is the most risky asset in the portfolio. I repeat, cash is the most risky asset in the portfolio when looked from a future perspective. As history shows, it doesn't beat inflation over the long term. So it won't shock anybody to understand that our portfolio, for someone who's got probably over 30 years to go to retire, Rich, their portfolio will be dominated by equities to allow that compounding power to really work. Now, when we therefore look at all these things, I'm going to suggest that in normal markets, and of course, we can all question what normal means, and I'm sure we will over time, but in normal markets, we would expect the portfolio to have a split of 75% equities and 25% other assets.
Right.
Now, that differs rather markedly, I think, from most wealth managers' advice, who would offer these days a 60% equity portfolio and 40% bonds.
That's the kind of theme that I've always been told. But now we're talking about it's not just bonds, it's all other assets.
Well, I think there's been a realization of two things. One, you know, equities give you a great return over the long term, but also that bonds are a part of your asset disposition. But they're not the only thing these days. There are lots of other assets like gold. We talked about that last week. Bitcoin, other commodities, and things like private equity, private debt. All these things are now forming part of a portfolio. So a lot of people are now saying it should be 60 equity, 40, all these other things. Well, we're disagreeing. We're saying 75 equity and 25 all these other things. But it is important to remember we're talking about somebody in the 30 to 40 year old age bracket with a long time to go till retirement.
So we said this 75-25, that is targeted generally thinking of 30 to 40 year old age group, but it applies to everybody, doesn't it? Whether you're 20 years old or you're 60 years old, all you're perhaps doing is, if you're younger, increasing the amount allocated to equities. And if you're a bit older than that age group, you're decreasing the amount to equities in theory, but we'll come on to that. And I know that Spice has got a different idea there. We were talking about what happens first in an allocation meeting. What would be the first kind of theme or discussion you would have?
To start off with, we've got to talk about what the investment environment looks like at the moment. And the way we would normally do that is we would identify what are the key themes that are affecting asset markets now, and we think will affect asset markets over the next sort of 18 months.
Okay, so this is a snapshot of what Mark takes us through every week, but taking that over a longer term viewpoint.
Maybe taking a little bit of a step back from looking at just those individual equity announcements to that environment. More of the conversation about how economic outlook is changing, and Mark's conversation about the movement in interest rate markets, that sort of thing is what we talk about here.
Okay. So what would be the first of those?
So the first thing for me that we should be thinking about is a general situation in the world where there isn't enough growth and there's a huge amount of debt. So we have in the US and the UK situation where we have got lots and lots and lots of borrowing. And at some stage, we may well have to worry about how we're going to repay that borrowing. My expectation is that we will see a little bit more inflation allowed into the system, because if inflation comes into the system, that's good for asset prices. And if you've borrowed money against an asset, therefore, you're feeling a lot more happier about the situation you find yourself in.
Okay, Spice, so the central bank target's 2%.
That's right.
Do you think that's the real target?
Well, no, I think it's actually higher than that. And that's because actually when we've been at 2%, that economies have struggled to grow. Too much inflation is clearly bad. But let me just tell you that the current inflation outlook, although rising a little bit in the US for this year to be 2.7 to 3.2. And as you say, they've got a 2% target. Now, the UK have had higher inflation, 3.2 and 3.7% this year. And basically, we've still been cutting interest rates. That tells you they're not really worried about this 2% target that much. They are worried about the underlying growth and stability of the economy. Because if you get into this downward spiral, then it can be very difficult to turn. Central bankers are thinking 1 to 12 to 18 months forward. Investors are thinking 3 to 6 months forward, particularly in equities. But interest rate cuts are likely to come. That's what the market's now. That is a great support for equities.
What does this mean for allocation? How does this thought process come into our decision-making on what's in the portfolio?
Okay, so to each of the themes, we want to give a clue as to what we think would happen. If we were in a situation where there's plenty of debt, inflation's allowed to run a little bit hotter than it has done, we would expect equities to do well, because earnings linked to inflation, they go up nicely. Bonds we would expect to not do so well. And we would expect the assets we talked about last week, things like gold and Bitcoin and metals, to keep up with inflation and so perform pretty well, which is what they've always done in the past. They've been good inflation protection. So in that scenario, equities plus, real assets plus, bonds minus.
Okay, so that's theme number one.
Theme number two, and one for Mark here, is the big hope being AI. And the if we look around the world at the moment, there's not a lot of great reasons for optimism about growth. But one thing that's really, really driving things is the optimism about AI, how that's going to transform productivity, and how it's going to therefore get earnings going very strongly and get growth going very strongly and bail everybody out of the mess they're in. I'm maybe not quite as optimistic as other members of this podcast on this, but I'm going to hand over to my friend to talk about the real benefits of AI.
Well, it's interesting. Goldman's yesterday, one of the biggest investment banks in the world, actually put out a report on AI and its implications over the next 10 years. They've taken the view that it will probably take at least 10 years for the full impact of AI to be felt. It is anticipated that there'll be a major boost to productivity of 1% a year. Now, to give you some perspective, that could increase GDP growth between a third and half each year in growth. So if the GDP of the US is 3%, growing at 3% a year real over and above inflation, it could be 4% in 1 year, or it could be 5% in 1 year.
Now, I think you're getting a little bit optimistic at that stage.
Well, you argue that with Goldman's. That's the numbers they've put out there. And they're far more intelligent than we are. That is absolutely huge, huge.
But what does it mean for our allocation?
If we look at that and we say we buy into this, you would expect equities to do well, productivity coming through to earnings and driving efficiencies of scale everywhere. Equities do well. Bonds could even do well because it could be deflationary. Mm. Deflationary means low inflation. Low inflation means low
interest rates.
Interest rates, thank you very much. Maybe not that helpful for real assets, for things like gold and the traditional inflation hedges, because if you've got deflation, maybe they won't do as well. So that's less positive for them. Positive for bonds, probably, but definitely positive for equities.
Right. Theme number three,
US political risk increasing. When you look at the numbers of how much debt the US has got, and you look at the balance of trade that they've got, you rapidly realize they need and have needed for many, many years the patronage of foreigners. They need people to come and buy their bonds. If people don't buy their bonds, then they've got a problem. Bond yields will have to go higher. Now, up till now, they've had no issue with that at all. Donald has come out with his Liberation Day tariffs back in April. And as you saw, the bond market went up in yields, most surprisingly for most people, as the Japanese and others decided they were not going to buy quite as many bonds just to make sure Donald realized who was boss after all. So we need to watch very carefully the rhetoric around that. Signs, in my view, are not good in one respect. The numbers that came out on Friday that Mark talked about from the regulatory authorities on the job numbers were worse than expected.
So the Labour Statistics Bureau released worse than expected numbers.
And Donald Trump fired the lady in charge. If you'd have said that about some other countries in the world, you could have imagined it. But America? You don't think that at all. So to me, that's a negative. Now, the implication to me of that isn't clear cut. I think you can think about it in a number of ways. But the one thing it does mean to me is the dollar probably remains weak. So in all how we factor that into our portfolio is dollar weakness.
Right.
The fourth theme, I think, is the seasonality of markets.
Right. Summertime.
And when we look at returns, and I'm going to concentrate on equity returns here, the two worst months of the year are normally August and September. September 1st, then August. So we've got to be really careful here. Think about where the markets are. Think about the seasonality. Does that play a part in what we are thinking about?
Okay. August, September, traditionally weak in risk assets.
There's a very old city saying that literally goes back 300 years, which is sell in May, go away, come back on St. Ledger's Day, which is in September, normally mid-September. This year, it's going to be, interestingly, on the 13th of September. But for those of you who are a bit worried about those things, it's not going to be Friday the 13th. It's going to be Saturday the 13th.
And what is St. Ledger Day for those that are not into their sport?
It's horse racing.
Wonderful. Now, so we've talked about the economic themes at the moment. What about the risks? The risks to our portfolio before we put out this to the world and staking our reputations on it, what are the risks that we've got to keep in mind?
So I've got two risks which I'm concerned about. One is, we talked a little bit just now about rising bond yields. I think we could really have a problem if bond yields in the US start rising rapidly, because there's not much the central bank can do about that, or the government. In the end, they could do QE, quantitative easing, where they buy bonds, but we're miles away from that sort of thing. There would be a bit of a panic first if bond yields went up quickly. So you just got to watch the bond markets. You'll remember in our bond piece, we talked about watching them, what the markets are doing. Just keep an eye on them for that.
And that's just searching something like on Google, US bond rates.
US 10-year bond yield, and look at that and see how that moves. You can look at that on the chart and see how that's moved.
5% would be worrying.
I think if we got to 5% yields, the market would start to think what's going on. It wouldn't expect that to be happening. And down at the moment, they're well below 5 now. If they moved up towards 5, I think that would show there was some worry around. We're comfortable, but watch it, number one. Secondly, much slower growth. The reason why the market fell 4% on Friday was worry about much slower growth. Now, there's a double-edged sword to lower growth. If you get lower growth, before long, people say, oh, but that means lower interest rates. And lower interest rates mean risk assets go up. So you go down and up. I'm surprised how quickly the market's turned around in the last 3-4 days, I have to be honest, given that move. But it shows you the effect of lower interest rates coming through. But if we saw some seriously weak data, you know, that could cause another risk to our scenario.
That's when you get profit warnings start to come through and equity markets react. So we set our normal rate. What would you have in allocation to equities at the moment?
I would have 85%.
85% at all-time highs.
We're very close to all-time highs. The fear of missing out, you know, when markets go up, they can quite often go up. It's a real test for people. And they, you know, not a lot of people have the bottle to stick with it. And as we said before, there's huge amounts of cash sitting on the sidelines, $7.4 trillion in America alone. That's about 15% of the S&P 500's valuation sitting on the sidelines because people are too scared to put it in the markets because we're near all-time highs.
Oh, I can just see, we go out with this, we put our monies into equities, and then boom, in a few weeks' time, we get one of these shocks like we got in August last year. Can we stand that, Chris?
But that is precisely the point we've been trying to bang on for the last few weeks about climbing a wall of worry. Because people are worried that there might be too high valuations, they keep their money in cash or in these safer assets. And these wonderful equity returns we've seen are missed out by most people. Until we get more evidence that more people are joining in with this bullish optimism, just remembering, Mark said they're 85, and we're taking our neutral as 75, 25. You know, clearly, if you're an older generation person like myself, you might not be 75 as your core view. You might be 65 or 60. And we'll be thinking about those in later podcasts. But for the benefit of this one, you've got plenty of time to ride over any negative action. And I'm with Mark in having a lot. I'm perhaps a little more concerned about the timing element, being that August and September are traditionally weak months for risk assets.
So the seasonality would pull you back from that 85 initially.
I'll use my prerogative as the chairman of the portfolio here.
Of course he
does. To say that maybe 85's a bit too hot. The fundamentals are strong. There is that. There is no doubt. We are seeing the fact that a lot of people are missing out, this FOMO, this fear of missing out that Mark's talked about. But I think maybe it might be wise to hold a bit of cash back just for a buying opportunity in the next few months.
Yeah. I'd like to take a moment to make you aware of an awesome offer IG is currently running. Until the 15th of August, IG is giving away a free UK share bundle to all new customers worth up to £100 when you invest just £20. Sign up for a general investment account, a stocks and shares ISA, or a SIP, and make your £20 investment to get started. Your capital is at risk. The value of your shares, ETFs, and ETCs can fall as well as rise, which could mean getting back less than you put in. New customers only. Offer is valid until the 15th of August for ISA, GIA, and SIP accounts. Other fees may apply and T&Cs apply. Brings us back to, this is about individual risk appetite. Okay, now the three of us, this is such an interesting combination because the three of us clearly have different risk appetites. Now, I will never make 60% in a year, right? Because I remember back at Brevan Howard, then I was steady double digits. 2007, I made 15%, bull market. However, 2008, I made 13%, and 2009, I made 12%. So no matter what the market did, because of my cautious approach, then I can make those steady gains, not the bumper ones. So when it comes to individual risk appetite, then that is one of the most important things. So Spice, having had 40 years of a career in equities, feels very comfortable being 85%. I would be a lot lower personally. I would be more like a 65, which is ironic, me being the younger one, and in theory should have more allocation. But it does, you know, this is just our model portfolio, isn't it? Putting our three heads together and coming up with this. It's not necessarily what everybody at home should do.
We're not trying to shoot the lights out, as you say. We are trying to do 10% a year. This is a sensible portfolio. And maybe in later episodes at some point, we'll start to be more adventurous or have a more cautious portfolio. But that's our aim. 10% for people between 20 and 40 or even 50. This is the right sort of portfolio to be building for your pension fund, not for something, a holiday fund that you might go out and you don't go on holiday if you don't make the money. Well, you know, that's one of those things. I mean, I think it's important to remember that, you know, there are, even I am respectful, not just of our chairman, but at the end of the day, I am respectful of the seasonality that's been going on for 50 years. It's very consistent. This sell in May, go away, come back on St. Ledger's Day.
I'm going to decide then that we go to 60% in equities now with a target of, let's say, 80. So we've got 20% in cash. Then we can get a higher amount, but we can wait for that opportunity.
Right.
So if you go back to our original premise of 75 as being our core, we're being under for the moment. So if your core is 60 or 80, you would be under as well if you were doing the same as we are, waiting for buying opportunity to put more money to work in August or September. So we're going to say 60 in equities.
60% we're putting into equities. We're holding 20% back for perhaps a market drop, and then we can take the choice to go in or the seasonality giving a better opportunity time-wise. Now, let's move on to other assets. What are we thinking about the now 20% that we've got left? Where are we thinking of that?
Well, if you look at the scenarios we painted, then a lot of them will suit real assets. And by that, I mean is assets which will be aimed to keep up and well ahead of inflation, but move with inflation. And we talked about a number of those last week. Mark, do you want to take us through what you're thinking in some of those real assets?
Well, we talked about gold, copper and oil last week, as well as Bitcoin, and we'll come on to Bitcoin later. Gold, we know, is two main attributes are, is a great inflation hedge, but it also does well when markets fall. It's a sort of counter-cyclical, if you like. And people rush to that in times of geopolitical worries, etc. So we want to have a decent chunk in gold. About 10% of the portfolio is what we're thinking. And, you know, that will give us stability on it when things get a bit bad. It's not going to completely insulate us, but it will help. And it does also mean that we can have a bit more risk in other parts of the portfolio by having this very defensive asset there. Now, we mentioned copper on the day we reported last week. It had fallen 20% in one day, a record ever fall in copper. We are pragmatic investors. We've got to think outside the box and not be scared by that big fall. As we say, we've seen a 20% fall. We still believe the fundamentals for copper are good. It's likely to grow at twice the level of global GDP, so about 5.5-6%, against the world growing at 3%. And there's no new supply coming on, as we mentioned before. That is a good backdrop for buying copper. Remember, copper got hit because Trump changed his tariff regime. That was a one-off. So we're going to put 5% of our assets in copper because we think we're trading towards the low and we think there'll be a decent bounce back.
And it also ties into our AI theme because the data centers are going to take up a hell of a lot of copper, and it buys into the electric vehicle theme as well, with a lot of copper needed more than a traditional vehicle. Right, so that's 15% we've spent there. We've got five left.
I'm putting my hand up.
Chris.
I'm putting my hand up because we talked about Bitcoin last week, and we are buyers and believers in Bitcoin. We can't buy an ETF in Bitcoin because there isn't one that we are allowed to hold in the UK. So we, as we said, we indicated last week, we're going to go with this VanEck Innovation Blockchain ETF for 5%. That 5% will be our holding to the crypto industry. It also gives us a bit of benefits from some of the data centers and things like that as well. So it helps us with a bit of that AI theme as well.
But that is an ETF that doesn't hold Bitcoin. It holds equities that are involved
in the Bitcoin process, whether it be mining, whether it be wallet provision like Coinbase, or whether it be the data centers. So it's very heavily involved in that sort of thing. It's quite a volatile instrument, which is why we've got 5%.
I think you've snuck another 5% equities in there. I feel a little bit cheated there, but I'll go with it.
Good man. As I'm the chairman, that's fine.
Right, so 10% gold, 5% copper, 5% the VanEck Bitcoin. So, Spice, take us through the geographical allocation of where you're going to put your 60% equities.
Well, at the moment, we're going to put two lots of 10% in the US. So about a third, of that 60% is basically going to go, 10% is going to NASDAQ, which, if you remember, is a very technology-heavy index. It has a huge amount of growth, irrespective almost of what the economy is doing. So if you get stagflation, these companies should still be able to grow, and therefore
so
they're attractive. You the cynic, the pain trade, may it hurt you for a long time.
You're just illustrating everything we've said, Rich.
Yeah,
and about it's being cautious.
Exactly. It's also, you know, a major part of the integral part of AI implementation and adoption. The other part, the other 10%, we're going to put in the S&P 500, but we're going to hedge it back to the UK, which means, as Chris mentioned earlier, we do have a slightly cautious view on the US dollar because there is so much debt around, particularly in the US, that the worry is that other countries won't fund it. They'll pull money out of dollars. The dollar will go down. So we don't want to we might make money on the index, but lose money on the currency. So to do that, we hedge it back. So we take that risk out of the investment. So we would buy a 10% of the portfolio in an S&P 500 hedged back into the UK exchange traded fund.
So normally, if we here in the UK bought the S&P 500, that would mean our investment would be in dollars.
Yes.
But this takes it back into GBP, right?
So if the dollar fell 10%, and the market didn't move, you'd lose 10% as a sterling investor if you weren't hedged back. Now, if we're hedged, the dollar could go down 10%, the market would go nowhere. We wouldn't make or lose money. We would still be.
And this is when FX is so important, because a lot of people at home that have already got investments in the S&P 500 would have thought they're doing well this year because the index has actually gone up. But we've seen,
in sterling terms, they haven't made much money at all by investing in the S&P because they've had the exposure to the dollar. We're trying to get away from that.
Now, I don't want to insult our sort of homeland, but another 10% would go into what I would call the chicken China trade.
What's the chicken's China trade?
So that is the FTSE 100 in the UK.
He can't resist. Red, I think it's red.
I think the hair's off. The referee's hand's gone to the back pocket.
Now, what you have to understand is the FTSE 100 is blessed in many ways because over 80% of its revenues come from overseas, outside of the UK. So when the UK is doing badly, it doesn't actually affect the FTSE 100 that very much. But about 20 to 25% of that exposure is in Asia and in China.
Okay.
So it's big companies like HSBC, Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, Standard Chartered, the mining companies, Prudential, Unilever, Diageo, all have massive businesses in China. Okay. So that's your chicken trade.
Lovely.
10% in the FTSE, 10% in Japan through the Nikkei. And that's because in Japan, they've got virtually no inflation, but they've got virtually zero interest rates. They're about 0.25% interest rates. So companies can borrow money at nothing and, you know, put their prices up by 1%, 1.5%, 2%. Well, that's an easy way to make money, isn't it?
Mm.
So why wouldn't you do that? And the Nikkei is blessed with that dynamic at the moment. So we think that will continue to take it up to new highs.
And we know that Buffett's been investing in there as well.
After 40 years of being one of the worst indices in the world, it's becoming more playable now. And actually, I think the changes are becoming ingrained.
So far, we've got 10% in the NASDAQ, 10% in S&P GBP, 10% in the FTSE 100, the mighty
Chicken's Trade,
the King's Index, 10% in the Nikkei. So we've got 20% to go.
Right, very quickly. So in Europe, we would put some money in Europe. But where do we want to put it in Europe? We're going to put it in Germany, in the DAX index, because that's Germany's main index, because basically they are increasing their budgets. They are spending more than they're getting in for the first time in 40 years. Since the last time they did that was back in 89 when they unified East and West Germany. And that saw the stock market go up very quickly in Europe, and it did very well. And we anticipate that happening again. For the first time, they are increasing spending. Finally, one of the other areas is where there are great demographics. There are population growth still growing way beyond the national average in India.
Uh-huh.
And India people work very, very hard. There's a huge growth in the middle classes in India, and they're natural savers. So they buy their stock market. They save month in, month out, month in, month out. And the Indian stock market over a long period of time. In fact, since COVID, I was looking this morning, India, although it's had a bit of problem around Trump's tariffs, is actually gone up more than the S&P 500 since COVID.
Wow.
There we go. There's one for you can have.
Yeah.
So the final thing, we talked about commodities last week, and Chris has talked about the benefits of real assets like gold, copper, et cetera. So we're going to put 5% in a mining fund. We're going to use the BlackRock World Mining Fund. We like commodities, and we know that that fund is very well managed by a very established fund manager, Evie Hambro. It's got a great reputation out there, and hopefully one day we'll get him onto this podcast to talk about it. But there you get to, in total, 60% of the portfolio here and now going into equities.
Excellent. And to find that on the IG platform, it's the BlackRock World Mining Trust.
It's an investment trust. It's been around for ages, well recognized as a leading trust. We just think that it's a good opportunity to cover all the bases within the mining side, which we can't cover them all. They can, and that's great.
I have to say, in this country, I am getting a little bit nervous. And I'm getting nervous that we've had rates perhaps for too high for too long. I'm hearing of, you know, job losses. Three friends of mine have actually lost their job in the past few weeks. And I think perhaps we're at that point now, getting close to breaking point of the cost of living crisis. So I actually favor short-term gilts as an option for the cash. Now, you're my bond expert, so I'm happy to take advice, but I wouldn't touch long-term gilts because we all know what happened in the Liz Truss debacle. But short-term gilts, 0 to 5 years.
Well, it also gives you a little bit of protection, as you say, against the weakening economy environment. They won't move much in price terms, so we're not going to take much risk. So given that you've taken the minutes assiduously today, I'm very happy for you to have 20% in a shorter dated sterling gilt fund.
Excellent. Right. I'll take that before we change our minds. So let's have a look at the full portfolio then. That's going to be 10% in the NASDAQ, 10% in the S&P GBP, 10% in the FTSE 100, 10% in the DAX, 10% in the Nikkei, 5% in India, 5% in the BlackRock World Mining Trust. Then we go on to other assets. That's going to include a 10% allocation to gold, a 5% allocation to copper, and then a 5% allocation to the VanEck Bitcoin and blockchain ETF. Then 20% in short-term gilts. Gents, are we happy?
Yes. Bring on St. Ledger Day.
That's where it's going. And I'm happy to be the chairman of the first ever meeting. Hopefully I'll last for longer than one.
Now, I think it is worth just pointing out, this is a long-term portfolio that you've put together here. And it may go down in the short term. You know, when we joke about sacking the chairman, then very much markets move. We're not in any control of that. So we could very well see losses in the first few weeks. And that's why we've structured it in a way that we've got some gold, we've got some gilts. But it is worth everybody Just taking that into consideration, if it's something they're interested in doing, you might see, you know, your capital is at risk when you enter a portfolio such as this. And it's also worth taking your own risk appetite into consideration. This isn't an idea that somebody should put their house deposit, you know, that they're waiting to buy a house and they should invest that, because, you know, that's definitely not what we're thinking here.
I think that everything underlying the decisions we're making here is that this is a long-term investment and should not be looked upon as really, how did it do yesterday? How did it do the day before? So you've got to be happy and comfortable with the risks you're taking. And you've got to be happy and comfortable to see that there will be negatives from time to time.
That's right. And so it's worth noting, they're going to see our entry costs, but it is always worth noting that we've done this in percentage terms because we know that people have got different amounts that they have in their ISAs. They got different amount in their pensions. And we wanted to do it from a percentage point of view, so you get that idea. However, if it is a sort of smaller amount of capital, you do have to be aware of the transaction cost, don't you?
You do, very much so. And, you know, you should never put into this sort of portfolio all of your life savings, because you need to have some cash back in case you have to buy a car or your car breaks down, you need to put new tires on or other things happen. You know, you never know what the world's going to throw at you.
Right. Thank you very much for joining us on this, the fifth episode of The Art of Investing. If you've liked what you've heard, then please give us a like, give us a subscribe, also a follow. Tell your friends, tell your family. If we have any questions from our audience or if there's any comments, gents, where should they write to?
The Art of Investing at IG.com.
I'll leave you with that beautiful, lyrical geniuses that they are. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio.